Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This is the Techno Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen-live. Or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
Listen to Joy wherever you are in the world with the new Joy app on your iPhone.
joy.org.au. Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, create it, turn it, point it, to me, press it, snap it, work it, quick, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick, rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, view it, code it, jam it, lock it, surf it, scroll it, pause it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch it.
Good afternoon, this is Techno Gaze on Joy 94.9, the show where we look in, gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets and technology.
I make you laugh every time you turn our mics on, Mark.
Yeah, you put me into a, I don't know, I get all flustered around you, Arby.
Down our voice
sports. Oh, I know, it's great.
So those two voices you hear this afternoon.
Hello, it's Arby, I'm back.
Hello, Arvie.
Hello, Donna. That's Donna over there. Say hello, Donna.
Donna.
Hello. Hi, I'm Donna. Hello.
It's lovely to have you back on the show, Donna.
Thank you, Mark. It's good to be here.
Excellent. Well, shall we get started on a bit of a tech show?
I'm grabbing my mic.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes.
There we go.
How about you just share mics? That'd be kind
we
of
could.
Cozy.
It's when you get the Madonna headsets, when you do, you see, you need to get involved and do outside broadcasts because then they give you Madonna headsets.
I know how much you like a Madonna headset too.
I do love a Madonna headset. I'm a big fan.
Do you do the hand gestures as well?
I have been
Vogue.
Known to do hand gestures.
It's a good reason to attend our OVs, right?
Yeah,
just to see
absolutely,
Arby.
Yes.
Do Vogue.
I have missed the spectacle so far. I shall have to make sure I attend the next one.
Right. Well, technology apparently is what we're here to talk
about. Oh, yes.
Sure,
technology. Let's be geeky. Come on, get your nerd on.
I guess with all the headsets, they're kind of technology, aren't they? So we'll talk a bit about today the latest in gaming. The PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One are both sort of being put head-to-head now. You know, comparisons are being made and not much is different between the two.
You've got to love a good versus, you know. There's Holden versus Ford, now Xbox versus PlayStation.
Mm. The big question, obviously, is will it blend?
I think that dude on the YouTube has proven that you can blend just about anything.
That would have to be a massive blender though, right?
It is quite a big blender. I suspect that there's a sledgehammer involved prior to the blending process.
You have to get it into bits small enough. Just like with your garlic, right? You should chop it up a little bit to ensure you get a smooth
blend. I think you'll find Cravings is the next show.
We
talk about technology, food
Let's
comes
go
later.
Xbox and
nice segue. It's great.
Okay.
So yes.
And DRM was big in the news this week, of course, with the Xbox One. They talked about it being a very DRM-friendly console from the outset. They said that they were going to introduce DRM for...
DRM, digital rights management, or digital restrictions management, depending on your politics.
Yes. Yeah. And they have... We'll discuss the fact that they've rolled a lot of that back.
Yes.
Thank goodness.
Says the non-gamer in the room. I find that hilarious.
You know, well, it's this is the thing, right? I really my current gaming console is a PlayStation 1, so I can't say I'm really up with the gaming kind of gadgets. But an Xbox in particular, I'm not much of a gamer, and I'm really not a fan of Microsoft. So I couldn't really get excited. But the DRM issue, I think, is huge and goes beyond the gaming platform. So
sure,
yeah.
We're also going to head into the stratosphere. We're going to talk a bit about Google's latest foray into real-world gadgets and putting balloons up into the air.
That's putting Wi-Fi on balloons.
Yes.
Yes, that's
intriguing.
That's Big Brother in a balloon basket, isn't it?
No cameras, though, apparently.
Well, so they say.
Yeah, until they want to do Street View from...
That's version two, right?
Indeed.
Now, we're going to do a bit of a gadgets roundup as well. There's a whole bunch of gadgets that we want to talk about. Including
Internet of Things.
The Internet of Things, yes. No longer is it fridges, just fridges. It's light globes.
I will admit I did cover a good internet fridge.
Right.
I have no idea why.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I actually read something more recently about, you know, the internet fridge was never really going to win because that's not where you are when you're cooking. If you maybe put the, you know, the console-y bit, you know, beside the stove, or, you know, that would probably have made more sense.
Or the bin, perhaps.
Or the rubbish bin.
Yeah.
I wonder as well how much of this is now being usurped by wearable computing like Google Glass. So that your Internet of Things is wherever your eyeball happens
to
be.
And this comes into the Pebble thing as well, that you've got, you know, a smaller version of your computer and a more accessible place all the time.
And we will talk about the social impact of things like the Pebble because I got into a lot of trouble with my Pebble at dinner the other night.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh.
We'll talk about that
Look
one later.
Look forward
as well.
To that one, yes. And speaking of getting into trouble, we're going to look at some of the stuff that's come up on, what's that website? Kickstarter, and
yes.
Some controversy there as well later on in the show. If we have time, we're already 10 minutes into the hour and we've only
done
an introduction.
This is what happens when you get me on the show.
But anyway, let's kick off with some news. And, of course, Microsoft and Sony have both done a console release. The Xbox One is the Microsoft One that they're talking about
one.
Now. And PlayStation 4 was, the specs of that was released.
And 4 is higher than 1. Does that mean that the 4 is better than 1? I love it.
We had a massive discussion about what does 1 mean? Because, of course, there's the HTC One as well. And there's all these manufacturers calling it the 1.
I think my argument in the previous discussion was what the implication of the 1 was that it was meant to be the one device that you required in your lounge as opposed to the first device.
Yes.
But we
the only.
Yes.
All said and done, though, the difference between the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One, there really isn't that much. They've kind of put the specs head-to-head. And really, the only difference that could be found was in the memory.
So is the real difference what's available for them? I mean, if fundamentally the technology is kind of the same, is it about, you know, the games that are available on each platform?
Correct.
And how much difference is there?
Well, you see, what's traditionally happened is that Sony and Microsoft have had their, what they would call their exclusive titles. You know, Microsoft obviously have the Halo genre because they bought Bungie. Who developed Halo. And essentially when Halo was first being developed, it was going to be a cross-platform game. And then Microsoft went and bought Bungie and created Halo as the flagship game title for the Xbox. And then the Xbox 360.
Yes.
Sony have their own exclusive titles. And it really nowadays is coming down to I'm going to pick the console that gives me the exclusive title that I want. And a lot of gaming friends that I know of, a lot of my gamer friends, will have one of each.
Right.
Because they want both platforms. Because they want exclusive titles on each.
Which takes away from their whole concept of, you know, this is the only console that you're going to have in your room and in your lounge room, right?
This is kind of interesting because, you know, I said before that I had a PlayStation 1 and I was completely addicted to Crash Bandicoot, which was, you know, and I probably would still
you're
go
giving
back.
Away your age today.
I know. I am an old lady. If you can't tell from my voice, I don't want to cry, okay? No, but Crash Bandicoot was just like I was completely consumed by it. And I saw a review recently that Naughty Dog have brought out this amazing game called The Last of Us or something. And I saw a review of it the other day. I think it was actually a good game. And, you know, Hex and Barjo both gave it 10 out of 10. And I kind of like pricked up my ears and went, well, Crash Bandicoot was all consuming. And the way they're talking about The Last of Us makes me think, well, maybe this is the game to get me back. And do I then go out and get, you know, a PlayStation 4?
What I find interesting is that being a recovering addicted gamer, because I'm one of those ex World of Warcraft tragics, and I love World of Warcraft, and I will defend to the death people playing it. that I've now gotten to the point that I manage my addiction to games by allowing myself to buy one game a year. And that will be my addictive game for the year.
I love the way you say, the way you say year. Sorry.
Well, you know, I'm from the colonies. And, you know, for example, my...
We'll just have to make him say it later on.
Okay.
How many... What?
Anyway.
I think I have a question.
So now my games du jour, there you go.
Another word we'd love to hear out of your voice.
Yes, are the Assassin's Creed games. Because I'm also an old man. and what I love about the Assassin's Creed games is that they're very rarely twitchy. So one of the keys of competitive gaming, if you like, is the notion of twitch gaming. The faster your reaction speed, the better you are at playing this game, particularly first-person shooter at the highest level type stuff. You know, you have to be able to respond to incoming waves of attacks or whatever else it is. One of the nice things about something like World of Warcraft is that The characters that I would play in World of Warcraft were not traditionally twitchy characters. I could take my time and plan strategically how I would respond to situations. Assassin's Creed is very much like that, where I can spend an hour or two contemplating how to solve a mission without having to do it all in 30 seconds or I die. And I find that it's an interesting balance. Nowadays, I'm looking for games that actually target my style of gaming, which is this low impact, if you like. Low impact, slightly more cerebral.
So
no RSI inducing games, is
given
what you're
that yeah. Where does the, you know, the DRM, how does the DRM kind of stuff impact you, because you've got to be connected? And
well, for me,
I mean, yeah, slightly, for something like World of Warcraft, you have to be connected all the time.
Obviously,
anyway, so
that's
what,
an online
that's not
game.
A big deal.
And it doesn't bug me. You know, a lot of people were saying that the camera is always going to be on. The Kinect camera is always going to be on in the Xbox One. I'm never in the room that my game console's in most of the time, so it doesn't bug me. I kind of wonder how much of this isn't mountains out of molehills, essentially. We are... You know, there was a great article, Donna, that you sent to us about the arguments for the Xbox One style of DRM. One of the big ones there is that when Steam first came out, you know, the guys, Valve, created Half-Life and Portal and stuff like that. Then they created the Steam platform. And everybody hated Steam because you had to use Steam and Steam always has to be on. And now people love Steam. And, you know, if you look at things like Humble Indie Bundles, where you get to buy lots of great indie games through Steam, because Steam is this fantastic platform for distribution that doesn't require manufacturing.
It's almost like a particular point in time we all decided that, yes, we'll hand over all our information and be online all the time and be restricted by what we do by being online.
Oh, hi, NSA. How are you going?
Yeah.
Hello. We are streamed online. They are listening.
Absolutely.
As soon as we made that decision, everything's just free-for-all now, right?
Like, I also do think that there is... The cynic in me wonders if there isn't an element of, let's see how much we can get away with.
Yeah.
Let's judge the public response to that. We'll roll a bunch of it back. Xbox One will launch, or another product will launch, and then slow. You know, we saw this.
Wear
with,
you down.
Yeah, we saw this with EA and SimCity,
yeah,
where there was this huge outcry over the fact that SimCity has to be online all the time. But EA in that have actually produced some really amazing upgrades to SimCity that only work when you're online and can only work when you're online, like global trading.
So this is the thing, right? I mean, you've got very similar arguments for and against DRM and privacy and security and all of these kinds of things. There's always a kind of debate. There's intrinsically people who are for, people who are against, all this kind of thing. But like the thing about DRM, you know, we're talking about it in what could be a fairly, I don't know, forgive me for saying this, but sort of a trivial space. We're talking about our entertainment.
Yep.
But DRM is something which impacts a whole range of users when it comes to technology, like for people who are blind accessing books.
Yes. And we will talk about that in a few moments. We do need to just take a few deep breaths.
Yes.
But I will say as well, you can actually text us if you have any thoughts on this particular issue. You
yes.
know, DRM is a big issue, right? It's been bubbling away for the last 5 years or so. If you know, it's something that we are kind of accepting now, where, you know, 5 years ago everyone was up in arms about it. So if you have something to say,
0427 joy 949, or email us on air at joy.org.au. we want to hear from you.
Or
you
can tweet also at us at technogaze.
We need that Twitter sound, don't we?
Yes,
just
we
to
do.
Just to remind you, Twitter technogaze, T-E-C-H-N-O-G-A-Z-E.
Joy 94.9.
That's right, this is Joy 94.9. You're listening to Technogaze. Arvi?
Yes.
Donna?
Yes. Present.
Hello.
And I'm Mark. We're talking about DRM right now.
Yes.
It's a big, you know, it's an issue that's been around for quite some time. We've been talking about it on the show for quite some time as well. And if you do have any thoughts about, you know, the concerns you have over DRM and what that might mean for us, you know, to have to always be online, to play games, to use our computers.
It's interesting because it kind of comes down to lifestyle choices. Now, I find myself, if I'm looking for somewhere to go on holiday, I have to go online and judge the quality of the internet service at the place where I'm going. Because I can't be without a connection.
Yes.
I may choose for some hours to not be connected or to ignore my devices. But the idea of forcibly being disconnected is anathema to me.
Do you come out in hives?
I do, get very anxious. I do get very anxious because shaking. Something could be happening on the internet.
Yes. You're hitting close to home. I've been without internet access at home for the last 4 days now.
That's right. You said you had no internet and no water, and I assumed you must have been in the desert.
I could cope with the no water, but the no internet is a problem.
Exactly. You can plan for no water. You can't plan for no internet.
We had internet services being done at my place on Tuesday and Friday and stuff, and it was quite interesting because, of course, being the geek that I am, I have alerting systems. So at 4:30 in the morning, when they decided that the emergency maintenance was going to happen, of course my phone starts to go off because the internet connection has gone down, and I start getting notifications from my alerting systems that
lights are flashing, alarms are going off.
It is kind of interesting that but in my defense, I also do work from home.
Yes.
So because I work for an IT company and everything that I do is online, and everybody sort of turned around and said, well, take the day off. I said, but no, I've got things to do.
Yeah. And I don't think that's the case now. I mean, it goes beyond the IT professional these days. To have an internet connection is pretty much standard across
there
the board now.
Yeah.
You need to really be on top of your emails and all
that. You have your water and your gas and your electricity and your
internet.
Very recently that to make internet connectivity or internet access one of the fundamental UN human rights.
Yes.
Mm.
Which I found fascinating.
Yeah.
You'd think it would be lower down after water, food, medical attention.
Well, the thing is that what's increasingly happening in Africa is people are actually not spending money on food so that they have enough credit to still have their phones connected. That connectivity, human sense of connectivity is greater than a sense of like basics like food. I mean, that was phenomenal. For me to read that. I boggled. I did. Sat there and boggled.
And of course, the whole problem with this is, you know, DRM implies that we have to be connected all the time. There's no way to implement a DRM system without having something to phone home to, right?
That's not necessarily true.
Okay.
It's an element for some systems, but there are other DRM mechanisms which basically just mean, you know, you have to jump through certain hoops to unlock your access. But and digital rights management, like region encoding, doesn't
on
necessarily
DVDs,
mean
yep.
being online. So.
And, of course, the other example is Apple's when you download movies from Apple, it's all encoded, but you can be offline when you watch them, right? You can have it on your iPad without having an internet connection.
And yet iTunes is now DRM-free.
For music, but not for movies and TV shows.
Well, I've never tried. I haven't downloaded
it's encoded.
Movies.
Yeah, you try it.
But there's an interesting, you know, and I think it was Glenn Moody was writing on Tech Dirt this week about using some really interesting techniques of personalization for ebooks. So what they do, and I think this is fantastic from a conceptual point of view, the guy who thought of this was brilliant, that basically what they do is they modify the text of the ebook in some very slight but identifiable way.
Yes.
So if And Hollywood has been doing this with Oscar screeners. So one of the problems that Hollywood's had is in order to do Oscar voting, they've had to send out copies of the movies to all of the Academy Award voters.
Yes.
And the problem they've had is that, of course, as soon as the personal assistant, the first assistant of said director gets a copy of the latest and greatest blockbuster, that thing gets put online in 40 seconds.
Yeah.
So what they've been doing is they've been encoding the screeners that go out with custom to each person. So they know, once they see the version that's online, they can tell who leaked actually, it.
They yeah. know who shared it.
Yes.
And they give them a smack over the knuckles, right?
Well, they maybe take them off the list of previews.
The same is actually the case.
That was the threat, and they have actually taken people off the Academy Award voting because yep. they have leaked
it. Can't be trusted. Indeed.
The same as can be said for iTunes Music as well. Even though it is DRM-free, you can still tell who downloaded
the metadata
track.
Embeds.
And it's very hard to get rid of that metadata. It's, in fact, I think Apple have gone after any programmer who's developed an app to actually try and cleanse that data because it is a DRM issue and there's a DMCA sort of clause or something Correct. That they're using to...
But we're seeing... You know, the interesting thing is the flip side to this is we're seeing a lot of the issues with... the extension of DRM is walled garden systems. Yes. Obviously, iOS and Apple's ecosystem around iTunes and the App Store is a closed wall and a closed garden, which means that you can't get something onto, ignoring jailbreaking a phone, which the majority of iPhone owners choose not to do or don't know how to do or don't want to do.
Yeah.
The only way to get an app onto that phone is from the App Store, and the only way to get it onto the App Store is through Apple. That gives Apple complete control over what's on the App Store.
And maximum ability to track what you're doing but the flip side and learn from that and give you suggestions. I mean, that's the double side of this thing.
Yes, but we're going to talk about a Kickstarter project that was probably likely and very much... wrong on several levels, but Apple used this ability to remove ex-gay type apps from the App Store, and of course our community would go, that's a great thing. Apple's control of their ecosystem means that they can very rapidly respond to things like that, whereas the non-closed wall gardens, things like the Android platform, which by and large people get things from the Play Store, but you can also load stuff onto Android's
Through other stores, yeah.
means that Google doesn't have necessarily the same amount of control, and that's both good and bad.
Yeah,
So we'll talk about that one.
They do have the kill switch on Apple's. I think does Android have a kill switch as
Yes,
where you can actually go out and delete.
Yeah. And the manufacturers maintain these kill switches. Yeah.
But I mean, this is like, it comes to when they talk about DRM or the rights part of that, whose rights are we talking about? Mm. Our rights to use or the copyright holders' rights to
They're almost never
sell.
Talking about our rights.
They're never talking about our rights, no. which is why you've got the digital restrictions management way of talking this, is it's actually about the restrictions that I have as a consumer to use this material and what
Correct.
What I have to, what I'm agreeing to when I click those buttons, or we don't break the seals on things anymore. We're saying I agree to let you do all of these things to me and not let me do what I want with this stuff.
Yes, and it is very much a case of protecting protecting historical publishing mechanisms, if
right.
you like.
And this is like what's going on this week is the WIPO, I think it's the World Intellectual Property Organization, has there's been a meeting in Marrakesh of people negotiating for the rights of blind people to circumvent restrictions, DRM systems, so that they can have audiobooks, so that copyright material can be made into audiobooks and that blind people can use them. Because like the alternatives of translating into Braille and then producing Braille books is just so the overhead for that is huge, whereas audio is much easier, and also text to speech. But a lot of the copyright rules in these materials just completely outlaw that kind of thing.
And this was a big thing. Both Apple in their iBooks product and Amazon with a Kindle had to remove their text to speech because they both had them.
Yes.
So that you could get a book read to you, i.e. any book that you bought could be turned into an audiobook via text-to-speech. And both manufacturers had to remove that capability because the copyright holder said, you don't have the right to transcode my written content
And that's what this treaty is all
and
about.
And it's a funny thing because it's a human right in a sense of allowing easy access or not...
It is.
Overly encumbered access for blind people.
And it surprises me that in you know, we
the
have
right to read. It's it's not written like that in the human in the Declaration of Human Rights, but it's implied in a whole bunch of clauses.
But Australia has laws against anti-discrimination, and that anti-discrimination covers discrimination against people with disabilities.
Yep,
we've had huge companies in Australia, if we think back to the Olympic Games and Olympic Games websites, who were fined tens of millions of dollars because their websites weren't accessible enough.
Yep.
And yet, copyright holders are still somehow maintaining their legal, and you can't see my scare quotes.
He's doing
I assure
them.
You I'm doing them.
He is.
It seems this disconnect between what is legally required in Australia, for example, in terms of anti-discrimination versus what the copyright holders are trying to establish through.
Technogaze here on Joy 94.9. Avi, Donna and Mark with you today.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello, gentle listeners.
And we're talking about the Internet of Things now.
Yes.
Now, what is the Internet of Things? I first heard this term and I was like, what the hell is that?
Well, I suppose the Internet of Things possibly started with Samsung's very short-lived, as we mentioned earlier, internet fridge.
Yes. It's a crazy thing, but, you know, the Internet of Things has moved on. It's not just about fridges anymore.
So it's not. And
it's gotten serious. It's gotten useful.
Well, useful is probably a...
Perhaps that's a stretch.
Yeah, hyperbole, I think.
Okay.
But, I mean, you'll find... I've always been a huge fan of what I call ludicrous Wi-Fi gadgets. Starting with, you know... starting with my love
of... like on a T-shirt or something? Ludicrous Wi-Fi gadgets.
In fact, the T-shirt should be a ludicrous
Wi-Fi gadget.
Well, they are.
I have a Wi-Fi T-shirt.
Do you really?
It doesn't work anymore, but it actually would start glowing when Wi-Fi was present.
I thought I was cool when I got my Apple logo T-shirt, which lit up based on sound around it. But
yeah,
it was like you could take it out to a dance club and you'd be like Apple nerding it up.
That's
right? Like
hilarious.
A modern hypercolor. That's awesome.
That right?
Modern hypercolor. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you know, I have a Nabaz tags, which are Wi-Fi bunnies. Essentially, are completely useless. They are, you know, little Wi-Fi gadgets with moving ears that react to internet things, and they have little lights. They make noises and stuff like that. And the Internet of Things is now taken off in the last sort of 6 to 12 months, very much on Kickstarter and Possible and other online funding, because it's allowed people to gauge the response of their consumer prior to the very expensive production process.
Mm. It's not just Kickstarter. There are some that are done just by traditional companies, like Philips, I think, have a Philips Hue.
Yeah.
So which is like a light globe, actually. Like, it's, you know, you see lots of Philips fluorescent globes out there. You can, you know, that's one of the big brands, and they've turned that into a Wi-Fi connected color changeable.
So these. Globe. So I mean, I'm a backer of something like LifeX, which has a lot of Australians behind LifeX, which are Wi-Fi enabled LED light globes that plug into your normal lights. But the LifeX is unique for two reasons. One, it's open. So it has an open programming platform. But the other really nifty thing about the LifeX over something like the Hue requires the Philips Bridge to control it.
Yes.
Whereas what the LifeX does, which I find fascinating, is that each LifeX bulb has a Wi-Fi signal, but it also meshes.
Right.
So it uses 802.15. So it creates this
mesh. That's a wireless protocol for those of you who are wondering.
Yes. It creates a mesh network between the LifeX bulbs. So you can just add additional LifeX bulbs and it'll extend its mesh network throughout your house, for example. So you can create lighting. You know, my plan, for example, and this is ultra geeky, I know, is that when I hit play on my home theater, I want my main lights to dim automatically and the back lighting to come up in different color. And something else that I'm backing, which is a, you know, Internet of Things kind of gadget, is something called LightPack. Again, you know, these multicolored LEDs that sit behind your displays and they extend the display. Really amazingly, what the light pack does is it plugs into the frame buffer of the video and it picks out what the colors are on the edge of your monitor, and then it extends that coloring using LEDs that are snapped onto the back of the monitor. So you get this color meshed glow that comes out of the back of the screen. So it extends that. It makes your screen look amazing.
And it gives it an ambience or whatever behind it.
Yeah.
That sounds so bizarre.
And it's beautiful.
It used to be the home entertainment room, the ultimate home entertainment room, was a couple of couches and a really good, you know, projector screen or something. Yeah. Now you've got all sorts of gadgets you can
But also, you know, you go to the extent Moores Cloud out of Sydney has built something called Holiday.
Oh, yeah. This is like the programmable, like, fairy lights, isn't it?
Yes, these are Holiday lights, but they have a full programming interface. The lights themselves are multicolored, again, like the light pack and the LifeX. There are 16 million colors inside an LED.
Yes.
And you can program, you know, Donna was laughing that you can program your favorite footy team's colors.
Well, this is the thing I saw it being promoted as, you know, get in there and here, you can have your AFL or NRL colors. And I thought, oh, God, yawn. But, you know, when you kind of delve into it a little bit more, you know, we have these things. We put them up for Christmas. We put them up for celebrations. But if you really think about it and you want to sort of change the colors to fit the mood or fit the occasion, it kind of starts to get kind of interesting.
There are entire streets around Melbourne at Christmas time that would benefit hugely from this. They'd be like entire markets. Holiday, you know, because so many people out there, the nerds, they go out and program traditional lights.
Yeah.
But this is going to that next step, right? It's each individual
light. It's not just the order
is...
that they flash in anymore,
no,
people.
No, it's like total control. And you then connect them to other systems so that, you know, you can have... I've seen a Holiday being used as a temperature gauge.
Right.
So the whole thing glows the colder and warmer it gets inside your house, for example. Or you use it as, you know, off the top of my head, I have rainwater tanks.
Yep.
But I have no idea how full they are. Imagine if you had Holiday hooked up to a meter inside your rainwater tank, that you had this level that went up and down a string of Holiday lights that showed you how full your tanks were or how full your, you know, how your solar panels were doing on your roof.
Yeah.
I suppose it could also have health. It could be used in the health system as well, that you could have it hooked up to various monitoring systems to, you know, I don't know, show that someone's heart rate is, you know, getting dangerously fast or slow.
And this, oddly, this links me to my Pebble. So I have a Pebble, which is a smart watch. So this is a watch that connects via Bluetooth to my smartphone, and I get notifications on my watch of things that are happening on the phone, like messages and phone. You know, if the phone starts to ring, I can look at my watch and it'll tell me who's calling and stuff like that. Google Glass, obviously, is coming out as wearable computing, which is always connected, and it's a camera. You talk about the Kinect being creepy because it's always on. The Kinect doesn't move. You know where the Kinect is
Google
at all
Glass
times.
Google Glass has some seriously creepy kind of connotations.
I'm a huge fan of Penny Arcade, and Penny Arcade Expo is coming to Melbourne in the next couple of weeks, and one of the creators of Penny Arcade actually has a Google Glass, and they've done a few comic strips on Google Glass. And the new social situations that he's finding himself in with a wearable camera, you know, and in podcasts that I've listened to recently by them, they're going, my wife won't let me into the room with it. You know, because
there is some amazingly cute stuff though. Like I think someone gave their Google Glass to their child to just get the perspective of what something looks like from a child's point of view when they're walking around the house, right? And that sort of enables him to go, well, you know, maybe if I did this to the bench or did that to the...
It's a real nice twist on, you know, walk in someone else's shoes. Well, wear someone else's glasses.
Yeah. The other manifest of Google Glass, I think, in particular, is how casinos are now starting to ban
the devices. Well, absolutely. Yeah. Because they can't see what's being displayed on the glass.
Yeah.
And your glass could be counting cards for you.
Yeah.
And you know, we joke about the fact that... we don't joke, I suppose, about the fact that every smartphone is a camera, therefore this massive increase in sexting and the sexualization of minors because everybody is their own producer. And inevitably, somebody's going to shove it down their pants. The Google Glass then takes that to the next... Can you imagine the first time where somebody makes a porn from the perspective of wearing a set of Google glasses?
And who knows what they're doing in that?
In 3D, sort of people. I think, it, you know...
Yeah, it's not that far away.
Yes. I'm petrified of the day when smell-o-vision really becomes a reality. Because that's just when that might be the straw that breaks my totally connected back. Fine.
Well, I mean, it's kind of interesting. We've already got the situation happening where we have a webcam, you know, built into our laptops. We have webcams on our computers, and they're very, apparently, incredibly trivially easy to hack.
Yeah.
And people are selling, access to a woman's webcam for $1, and unfortunately, men's access to men's webcams is a bit cheaper. I don't want to go into that, but you know, that is happening, and that, you know, with something like Google Glass, you don't know if it's on. People are just wearing it. Everything you're seeing could be being filmed, and everything you're being looked at is being filmed.
And there was an article. Mark. There was an article recently about security cameras and Wi-Fi webcams that people don't secure.
Yes.
So that somebody did a scan. They just started scanning the internet for Wi-Fi cameras. And there's this website, and I'm not going to tell you what the address is. But essentially, it shows you the latest picture from all these unsecured Wi-Fi cameras.
Wow.
And it's just taking pictures because they're on the internet and people didn't secure them.
Yep. Then there is privacy legislation in place, particularly here in Australia, where, you know, what can you monitor in private, what would be considered private areas like change rooms and all the rest of it. But how does that actually apply to the likes of Google Glass and all the rest of it? Like, I think the etiquette, I think, that has been talked about on the internet when people actually have Google Glass is put your glasses up on the top of your head when you go to the bathroom so that it's always facing up, so there's no chance of...
But that's an intervention. I mean, I wonder how long it's going to be before somebody creates the Google Glass Buster. You know, a device that they put into their change rooms that disables a Google Glass or other things.
Like, you know, we have some areas have that for mobile phones, for instance. They just put a scrambler in place. Yeah.
And I can, you know, I can fully understand the need for something like that in certain spaces where you can't rely on the humanity of strangers, for want of a better... And this leads us to probably a very interesting topic of this week, a Kickstarter that came out.
Yes.
The How to Sexually Assault a Woman... No, sorry, How to Seduce Someone guide on Kickstarter that got funded.
Yes.
And was complained about before it got funded, and Kickstarter... did as they do and erred on the side of the creator of this and let it go through, and then subsequently issued an apology. Now, Avi and I were having a chat about this before. Avi assures me he was playing devil's advocate and pushing my buttons, but...
which I enjoy doing.
He does enjoy, and I might confess to... No, I'm not. but it raises some really, really difficult issues, and we kind of dived into the grey area of, like, on one side you've got, you know, free speech and censorship, and on the other side you've got, well, you know, we don't condone, you know, how to make bombs. Do we condone how to sexually assault women? And this is where this particular guide was going. It claimed to be, you know, helping men who may feel unconfident in approaching women in how to pick them up, but it went to a whole other level.
Yeah, and certainly I will say this publicly on air, I was not in any way at all condoning this guide. You know, it falsely attributed to Voltaire, I think the saying goes, is that I disapprove of what you're saying, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. We have laws against sexual assault. We have laws against setting off a bomb. We have laws against all of these things. There is a line that I present as devil's advocate going, who gets to be the censor about thought crime? And I know that I'm using sort of very emotional terms, and I do that on purpose because, you know, you look at movies like Minority Report that use this to the nth degree. They're going to say, we're going to arrest you and charge you for crimes that we think you're going to commit.
And this is where I violently agree with you. I don't think we want to be policing what people think and what people say. We certainly want to be policing what they do. But where it starts to get grey and murky is where you start condoning this culture of, you know, the unspeakable thing. And so we, you know, yes, sexual assault is illegal, but creating an environment where sexual assault is a funny thing, or the idea of rape culture, that we can laugh about,
and privilege culture.
And privilege culture. You know, we start to get into this area where we say, well, actually, there are some things we want to say are unacceptable, and there have been things throughout our history that have been taboo. And sort of in this context, we sort of say, well, sexuality is one of the things we used to never discuss. So we kind of have to... we have to kind of be really grown-ups when we talk about these things and not necessarily be reactive.
Correct. And I think, you know, we see this a lot in our communities where, you know, you'll go to a vendor that provides free Wi-Fi and you'll find that, that the Joy website is blocked.
Mm.
Because it deals with sexuality.
Right.
And that's censorship, and that's bad. And we don't like that, and that must stop.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we all would stand up and say, you know, of course that's bad. I mean, like, the other one, of course, is Facebook. They're saying, you know, it's okay, we're allowing these jokes about about raping women, but we won't allow women to share images of their breasts and talk about breastfeeding.
Yeah.
There's this kind of weird, this
double
is okay,
or...
but this is not. And we don't have any really good rules or ways of kind of navigating through
and
this
And I think
territory.
It's also because... You find that the people in charge, and I use that term very loosely, but the people in charge of these websites like Kickstarter in the response, now their apology on their blog I think was exceptionally well written and well considered. So I do urge you to go to the Kickstarter blog and read their response and have the discussion with Kickstarter about that particular instance with them directly. I think we find that we're attributing to platforms what historically was the mandate of publishers.
Mm.
In the sense that, you know, now everybody's a publisher.
Yes.
And for some reason we expect, you know, there was a stat recently about how much video is uploaded to YouTube every minute. And it's something like 10 or 12 hours every minute is uploaded.
It's a huge amount.
There is no... It's absolutely not feasible for you to read even a percent of that kind of content.
Because it all comes down to the intention behind what it is that's being published, right? And to be able to control or do an assessment against every single second of video.
Absolutely. And this
or
is why, you know,
text
you,
or...
we see the, you know, there are funny instances where, you know, the automated systems block videos from the people that produce the original source, and you know, like where somebody sends out a DMCA notice against themselves because they noticed it on their own website. But it's literally because we are producing so much content in every second that it is not feasible for human beings to filter it.
So what's the answer, though? The answer is to develop something that can start to understand what you're thinking.
I think that's called Skynet.
Yes.
And they're in line because then it's going to take over. Yeah. And we're never going to see the end. There is no answer to this.
I don't think
there's an easy one, at least.
One of the tricky parts here is actually about how we respond. So when we do notice it, when it does impact, then we're called to act. And how we act and how we respond is actually what matters. Rather than the fact that it exists in the first place, it's like, well, what is the impact of this existing and who is it hurting?
Interestingly enough, the same platforms that are being used to put this stuff out there are the same platforms that can be used to rile up against it as well, right? It's all, I can publish my own thoughts about X, Y, and Z and have that take hold and
I think, you know, I think companies like Kickstarter and Apple and Comixology, you know, Dean and I discussed on Sci-Fi and Squeam about removal of what were essentially explicit comics from comic book apps. We find now that publishers are having to self or remotely censor as a way of doing market control. It's a perception thing. You know, that this is not about... this is going to sound ridiculously cynical again. But this is not potentially about protecting our children. This is about protecting my brand.
Mm.
And
that's what it's been for Kickstarter.
Yeah.
They realised that this was not something that they actually wanted associated with them, and that's why they acted. Before they were like, no, this is what we do, we don't care, but now we've had this backlash and it is impacting our brand.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because where you think this is a free and open platform to fund any and all ideas, and you want the public to determine what gets funded and what gets doesn't, I think the biggest telling point, the take home for this project got funded
goal.
This means that enough people thought this was a good idea to give them thousands of dollars.
Not and individually, but
yeah,
in combination,
in,
right?
In total. And yeah. I think that's the bigger concern here.
Yeah. Yeah. This is Technogaze here on Joy 94.9. We've run out of time.
We have.
It will be, I don't know, it's almost 1 o'clock. It's 4 minutes to one. We'll have a wrap-up in just a few moments.
Technogaze.
This is Technogaze here on Joy 94.9. We're just about out of time.
We have a minute and 40 seconds for those of
you counting at home. Quick, say everything now. Quick.
We hope you enjoyed the show. If you do want to check back on previous episodes or listen to this show in a few days.
No, come on, Mark. I think you're being underestimated. You put this podcast up within minutes of the show ending. I've seen you.
I just want to set the expectations low. That's all.
Yeah, working IT.
You can do so by going to our website, joy.org.au/technogaze.
Yes.
Coming up next is Joy Cravings. News Bulletin with Matt Thompson, and then after that we'll have Cravings.
So then they can talk about food and garlic.
I should stay for that show.
You should.
Om nom 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 nom. Nom. Thank you, Donna.
Thanks, Mark.
Coming in today.
I'll take Avi out now, shall I?
Oh, dear. Thank you so much for having me.
And we'll catch you next week. See you later.
Bye.
See you later.
Bye.
Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.